integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick, and this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation. Welcome back, and thanks for being here. And thanks to the Great Courses Plus, they've made another episode of Military Justice a reality. Today we have on reporter and friend Hope Hodsek of Military.com. We talk about the Navy, some courts martial, and a wide-ranging discussion of some of the recent issues going on in the Naval Service. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy. Well, welcome to the show. We've got Hope Hodsek on the show today. Hope, what do you prefer as far as your nomenclature?
Hope Hodsek is what I have in my byline, so that works for me.
And byline, who are you writing for these days?
These days, I am the managing editor of Military.com, the military's premier news source.
And you've been with them for, what, 2.5 years now?
Close to three, yeah.
And where were you before that, Hope?
Prior to that, I was a reporter for Marine Corps Times, part of Military Times, one of our close competitors. And I've been covering the Marine Corps for close to a decade now, and the Navy for a little bit less than that.
When you say you're covering the Marine Corps, what do you cover? Anything in particular, or just kind of everything that's going on?
Well, these days, I've got a pretty wide scope because I'm overseeing all news operations, but a lot of my beat has had to do with Middle East, general officers, deployments and operations, and military justice. I've actually attended many, many court-martials over the course of my career, and I've developed kind of a particular interest in that.
Yeah, and then, you know, just for the listeners' knowledge, Hope and I are colleagues and friends. I would consider Hope my friend, and we've known each other for 6 years now, at least, 5 or 6 years.
That's right. It has been that long. I think since 2013.
I can't believe it took me so long to get you on the show.
Well, you know where I live.
Yes, I do. So, you were talking about general officers, the Navy, and courts martial. Are anything going on in that arena these days?
Absolutely. The Navy just wrapped up a series of court-martials and Article 32s and lesser proceedings regarding the two incredibly tragic, deadly collisions that happened last summer. Two separate destroyers were involved in these collisions that involved other merchant ships. Both took place in the Pacific. And in both cases, the Navy took the really extremely rare step of bringing criminal charges, not only against the commanding officers and executive officers, but also the officers and enlisted members of the crew. So all of those proceedings just wrapped up, and I think, you know, a lot of people in the community are still kind of reeling from the way it all played out.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's been very odd the way it wrapped up, especially criminal proceedings from the beginning, but then it really just kind of, some of them faded right there almost right before trial, right?
There were. I mean, there were some real last-minute moves. At least one senior officer waived an Article 32. The commanding officer of one of the ships pleaded guilty kind of right before trial, so people were expecting a much longer proceeding. And a lot of the lower-end cases, or at least those involving lower-ranking individuals, were sort of wrapped up privately with, you know, guilty pleas and other disposals before they went to open court.
Right. And for the listeners, the Article 32 investigation is similar to a grand jury hearing. It's a preliminary hearing determining what charges should go forward and a recommendation on the disposition of those charges. So we had one officer waive that, and then he actually pled guilty. Is that correct?
It was actually a different officer. So it was Commander Alfredo Sanchez, the commanding officer of the USS John McCain, which was the second ship in the second collision. He was the one who pleaded guilty in a court-martial that just happened last week.
But he pled out at a special court-martial, right?
That's right, and as part of a pretrial agreement.
Now, that, for the listeners, that's also very odd. I'm not as sure about the other services, but by and large, the Navy Marine Corps, you never see an officer go to special court-martial because he can't be awarded confinement at a special, so they always go to a general court-martial, and that's the equivalent of a felony court, you know, can award punishment over a year. And that's really odd that it was moved back to a special court-martial. I've talked to some colleagues about that, and I can't remember that happening in my memory, at least.
Just overall, I'm curious about the message that the Navy was trying to send in going this way and whether the big Navy's goals were accomplished in the way this all shook out. I agree, especially with this commander, Alfredo Sanchez, who goes to special court-martial, and they're saying that he had this, you know, exceedingly small role in this tragic situation where a lot of the guilt has been placed on the Navy and readiness issues and kind of bigger things. But you also have, I think, 12 different family members who spoke during his sentencing and just ripped into him and all the sort of evidence of negligence.
Sorry, I might not have covered that earlier, but like as you're saying, both of these crashes, we had, was it 8 and 12 in the various collisions? Sailors died, right?
7 in the first one, that's the USS Fitzgerald, and 10 in the second, which is the McCain,
yeah. No, so keep going. So he pleads out, and then during the pre-sentencing portion of the case, that's where the prosecution gets to put on evidence in aggravation. So they called, as you said, 12 family members?
Yes, who are just giving this brutal, gut-wrenching testimony about the horror of losing children, siblings, in this way. I mean, people talking about the science of drowning in the horrific way that these individual sailors must have perished. And I've read the extensive investigation into both collisions. They came out last year, and I read them, you know, kind of cover to cover. This commander, I mean, they faulted him with a lot of stuff. You know, he's in this busy shipping lane and doesn't set up a sea and anchor detail, which is kind of extra people on the bridge to make sure the ship gets through okay. He makes a really bad call to split up steering and throttle, how fast the ship is going, and everyone gets confused and they think they've lost steering. It goes on and on. So, I mean, we're kind of on a tangent here. I can't imagine, you know, this commander who's now going to request retirement as part of this deal, you know, how he contemplates this. And, you know, by all accounts, he was a fine officer, you know, before this happened. But, you know, did the Navy get out of this what it wanted to?
I agree with you on that question because, I mean, I've read your reporting on this. And so, you know, I'm going off of your reading of all the reports. But this isn't one of the egregious situations where you have, you know, the commanding officer is in his stateroom the entire time with, you know, some junior enlisted in a sexual liaison, which we had a couple of years ago, and we have a crash then. It seems that this is more calling into question his judgment, but where do we move from mistake to actual criminal activity? And I think that's probably part of the question we have. And it's very tragic, I mean, that all these sailors were lost. But the military in general, we deal with huge machines and deadly things, you know. So when there are accidents, people are hurt, you know, they're crushed or drowned, or, you know, or we have things explode. But what was the Navy's goal? To make people better decision makers, or keep them from, you know, engaging in criminal misconduct? Did you get a feel for that at all?
You know, it's, as with so many things, you're just trying to read the tea leaves. I think the Navy was trying to send an unequivocal message. And that message, you know, the simple text is, we're taking this very seriously. You know, they, as everyone from the top of the chain of command to the very bottom, they commissioned two very extensive, wide-ranging reviews on Navy practices that went back to the 1970s. I just learned the other day that the most recent commander of basically Navy Surface Forces is going to be asked to retire at a lower rank. So everyone's getting dinged for this, but how much sense does it make to now introduce the element of criminality? If you're already saying that these individuals are overworked, that they're not getting enough training, that they're deploying and working 100-hour weeks with limited supervision, if you've already identified all those problems, can you then have it both ways and say that the people who did all this were also criminally negligent? I just don't know.
I'm a firm believer that learning doesn't stop after school. I've spent my lifetime learning, and I'm always looking for new ways to dig deeper into topics that fascinate me. That's why I really enjoyed the Great Courses Plus wonderful new course, American Military History, From Colonials to Counterinsurgents. As you all know, I'm a retired Marine Corps officer and lawyer. So during my entire time in the Marine Corps, all of us Marines and service members from all the other services, we're constantly learning. We're studying about history. We're studying especially about military history. And I've got to tell you, this recent course that's hosted by retired General Wesley Clark has been great. It explores three centuries of America's wars, and he's a great storyteller. I think I really got a lot more out of this, both because of the audio lecture and the video. And that's one other thing I'd like to mention that I've really enjoyed about the Great Courses Plus. Some of the lectures I've listened to, just audio. So it's kind of like a podcast. But then some of them, you really need the graphics and the visuals. And I found that it's nice to be able to do it both ways. This is the perfect course to get you started with the Great Courses Plus. Or you can choose of their more than 10,000 lectures. With the Great Courses Plus, you'll get unlimited access to stream their entire library. Learn from leading professors, experts about any topic that interests you, history, philosophy, law, science, military history. You can even do hobbies like photography or playing the guitar. So watch or listen to the Great Courses Plus anytime, from anywhere. I want you to enjoy the thrill of learning from the Great Courses Plus also. So I've arranged a special limited time offer for listeners of Military Justice. A full free month of unlimited access to enjoy any of their courses. But to start your free month, you must go to my special URL today. Sign up at thegreatcoursesplus.com/justice. Remember, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/justice. They've been a great sponsor of this podcast, and I truly think that you'll enjoy it. Thank you. I had this happen now 15 years ago or so. When I was a defense attorney, I had a client who was the captain in charge of the pool, the training tank at MCRD San Diego. And we had a drowning there Actually, it wasn't a recruit. It was an instructor who was going on to become a master instructor for swimming, and he drowned in an incident. And we had the same problem. They brought charges against a number of people, I think five or six in all. But then the reports had those similar type of findings where they're like, well, the training wasn't scheduled correctly. You know, they've had a lot of institutional issues that they identify. But then where, if you have those in combination with criminality, it's a very difficult area to manage, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if I were writing a follow-up story on this today, I would probably be calling you for your expert input. And one of the questions I would probably be interested in asking is, does this change the game at all going forward? I mean, I know we don't really talk about setting precedent in a formal way in such circumstances, but could the Navy be more prone to take a similar attack in the future when you've got tragic accidents where people die?
Well, and not to rag on my Navy brethren, but in the ongoing Fat Leonard case, they have been foot dragging for years on bringing any sort of action against any of those officers, those senior officers. And that's, yes, there were no deaths there, but there were a lot of, I mean, we've had even admirals going to jail and NCIS officer, and all for bribery charges and giving over top secret information. And the Navy doesn't seem to be sending a message at all in that arena. Or, and this is our mutual friend Craig Whitlock. You know, he covers this. That seems to be his only story. I mean, not that there's so much of a story. That's, you know, he's on that thing all the time. And I've started to think about the Fat Leonard case as like the AIG bailouts that we had with the government. That there's so many senior officers involved in that case that they're almost, it's too big to fail.
It is. It's too big to cure, it seems, or to kind of get rid of it and move on, dispose of it nicely. It extends to things like, I don't know if you knew this, but the sort of presumptive head of Navy public affairs can't take the job because of tie-ins with Fat Leonard. You know, I don't think anyone is accusing him of anything, but it's the idea that so many people, you know, were kind of connected by association and you know, and really kind of smaller link to this, that it encompasses pretty much, as you said, the whole Navy.
Yeah. In fact, I talked to another reporter about maybe about a month and a half ago. We had a lengthy discussion, and the Navy was giving him some pushback, saying, well, there's, you know, we're really upset about this because we can't fill our senior officer vacancies. They can't slate because about 30% of the admirals in the Navy are under some sort of investigation. And it turned into kind of almost a farce, in the sense that the Navy was mad that it was taking so long to punish people because they can't slate, but it kind of moved past, well, aren't you upset with the individuals who have committed criminal misconduct?
I'm curious, and this again would draw on your legal experience, but is there anything, any wide-ranging scandal in any of the services historically that you could compare Fat Leonard to in its scope?
I think you could from Tailhook.
Yes, Tailhook.
Yeah, because even when Tailhook, if I remember correctly, was in the mid-80s, early 90s, and it was
years
after that. I mean, it had to be 5 or 6 years after that when I was first joining the Marine Corps. I hadn't even been on active duty. I'd just gone to get a physical, and one of the questions was, have you ever attended, you know, were you in attendance at any of the Tailhook conventions? And I'm like, I remember asking the, you know, my recruiter, I'm like, I don't even know what this means. He's like, yeah. So that had a long lingering effect. But outside of that, I can't think of anything. But it just seems like part of the Fat Leonard ongoing drama is just to kind of ignore it. Because, like you said, that they just need, you have to have so many admirals. I mean, there's only so many, and they've got to fill spots.
That's right. And, I mean, the Navy is bigger than the Marine Corps, but it's not even the biggest service. But in the higher up you get in the ranks, the thinner the population gets.
Oh, yes. And given the amount of time behind, we're talking about a lot of the 3- and 4-star admiral moves. And they're, even though they're bigger than Marine Corps, they're still, you're only talking about maybe 50 individuals. I mean, there are not a lot of 3- and 4-stars in the Navy.
That's right. So right now the Navy has got a multi-pronged PR issue. I mean, between collisions, we've also got aviation crashes, Fat Leonard. It's really embroiled deeply in all of these issues that are giving the service one, if not two, black eyes. It would be an interesting PR problem to think about how to claw your way out of there and to sort of reestablish, you know, dominance and a good image. I guess the promotions for Top Gun 2 might help with that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. We will. Is Mav making a comeback on that? He and Slider and Goose?
Maverick is making a comeback. Apparently, he in 30 short years has made it from lieutenant to captain. That's what I gathered from the promotional art. And now apparently he's flying a Super Hornet.
I'll tell you what, I might make fun of Top Gun a little bit. But somehow Tom Cruise looks identical to Tom Cruise of 30 years ago. What is it? Do you have any insight on like what magic elixir that guy's on?
I wish I knew. I suspect it has something to do with Scientology.
Yes. Oh, wait. No, I didn't mention Scientology. That was only hope. Wyrick has nothing but good things to say about you all, so please don't say anything. So, no, I agree that back, you know, since we digress for a moment. So, you know, back to the collisions, it really is difficult. And I understand that the problem that the Navy faces, because if you have, you know, almost 20 sailors who die in 2 collisions, there needs to be some sort of hearing about that. And, you know, you owe an explanation to the family members of those sailors who, you know, entrusted their children going into the Navy and then they perish in an accident. But I don't know that a court-martial is always the right way to go about that. Did you feel that that the families got closure out of it, or was it more anger, or what was the feeling that you got?
Now that I'm in sort of more managerial role, I wasn't actually able to be there in the room, although I wish I had been able to be. But, I mean, being able to be heard, I think, is a powerful thing. Just being able to read those statements at sentencing and, you know, look in the eye of an individual and explain what you've been through, I think that's powerful in and of itself. And, you know, I know they give ample kind of time and accommodation for that kind of thing in the court-martial process. But again, you wonder if it's misplaced. You know, as many things as this commanding officer did wrong in the worst 3 minutes of his life, you know, is he the one that these family members should kind of have on the hook here and be holding accountable when, you know, we've identified all these problems with the Navy in general? So I don't know if there's closure. I think there's an element of just kind of being heard. I mean, you know, there's been 1,000 stories and very few of them that have come out have really discussed the families and all this at all.
So when apartheid is lifted in South Africa, they have hearings and they kind of go through the history, but they weren't criminal proceedings. They weren't criminal hearings, but it was like an airing of grievances. And I think we had this in the Bo Bergdahl case also, that, you know, all of his members of his company, and that they had anger towards him, and then they just wanted to be heard. You know, the people that were either injured or, you know, suffered, you know, because of him leaving. And I think that they thought that that was going to be a bit of a salve with a court martial, but kind of in both of those instances, the collision, he's not even going to jail. So is there really enough punishment that the family says, well, okay, you know, we feel better because this person's being punished? Because if he's not being punished that much, is he really guilty of much? And I think the other problem you have with that too is just the dynamic of a court martial. The defendant can't really express themselves because, you know, I'm not going to let a client, you know, talk openly about, you know, things that could be bad for him. Where if you had more of an open hearing, he could express more to those families and maybe give them a little bit better closure. You know, that explaining the stress the entire crew was under, or, you know, the difficulties of operations at that time, that aren't really minimizing or trying to exculpate himself from guilt, but explaining more of this is why this happened. You know, I'm taking responsibility because I'm the captain, but let me explain more to the families. I don't know if that would help them more, but it seems to me if I was told by the big Navy that this guy's a criminal because of what he did, and then he pleads out at a special court martial where he can't even get a day in jail, I'm kind of receiving mixed messages. Does that make sense?
I mean, it sounds like sort of what you're proposing is a town hall forum or some kind of mediated exchange where everyone gets sort of acknowledged and heard, but the prospect of criminal proceedings is not in the picture. Or something like that, where the Navy finds another way to address this issue and get the family's questions answered.
Right, because, I mean, like you said, you know, those officers, the captains, weren't in crazy situations, you know, where they were just like they were drunk at the helm or something. You know, these were less than optimal decisions, but once you put it in that criminal context, they can't express any, or it's very difficult to express remorse or give explanations because that's just not the way a criminal proceeding works. You know, so they can't have that interaction with the family the way they could if it was a non-criminal explanation of just what happened. And believe me, I know service warfare officers. They have a close connection with their crews, you know, that those are people that live together for months and months at sea. I mean, that had to be horrific for both those captains and, you know, the kind of chain of command down. They knew those people.
Indeed. It's hard to even think about. I mean, it's really tragic for everyone concerned, including the people who ended up being defendants in these proceedings. I wonder, you know, again, to kind of get back to that central question, in retrospect, if Navy officials who said, this is the approach we want, we're doing this to send a message, if they're sitting back and saying, you know, I'm happy or I'm satisfied with how that went, I would do it again, or, you know, this really just didn't achieve whatever it was we were going for, whether it's closure or to, you know, to really send a clear message of rebuke or to frighten future crews who I imagine are need no further frightening.
Right. This just sets you up. I mean, I covered it for a long time, and I personally knew people that were involved. And I think going back to Bo Bergdahl, when big Army or big Navy goes forward with serious criminal misconduct, but then Bo Bergdahl pleads out and is found, you know, there's really no punishment at the end. I know that exacerbated some of the anger of people that had served with him, that the Army had almost like set them up, like, don't worry, this guy was a really bad guy. He was a bad criminal. So we're going to get all of this punishment we can out of him. And then when it doesn't happen, then I know that there were people that had served with Bergdahl who were very upset by that. And I can imagine that was the same with this case, you know, that taking that plea deal by the Navy says, well, we're really not that upset. And
right. You're
kind of set up with that expectation that they really thought this guy was a criminal and that he would be held to account.
And with Bergdahl, I mean, I listened to the Serial podcast, as I know you did as well. And I found it most interesting how they kind of traced the root of the public perception of the issue back to the way, people were introduced to the news of him being back, which was very carelessly.
Right.
You know, and sort of a thrown together celebration, and the people are processing that and realizing, no, we're angry at him. This was wrong. So, again, you wonder if, you know, some better planning or consideration at the very beginning could have led to a different outcome.
And the same with these collisions.
If, energy in a different direction.
Yeah, the same with these collisions. If you tell, like, okay, we're telling the families, these were tragedies. We can't tell you how, you know, sorry we are for the losses, but we're going to give you all this information, you know, obviously not classified stuff, but like this information about why and how this happened. And then if you have the captain there to, you know, and his staff there to explain it, instead of them being kind of over on the side as potential criminals, you know, then they can't be involved in that. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a really kind of revolutionary idea. I mean, you know, in all the sort of incidents and investigations I've covered, I've never known the military to sort of make the people, the characters at the center of it, available in that way. But it doesn't mean it wouldn't work.
Right. And
I think there's real potential there.
Yeah, I think that it would require a little bit better farsightedness to say, like, okay, let's really evaluate, like, what kind of criminal, like, punishment are we actually going to get here? And is that worth it? And especially, like you mentioned, beyond the captains, down the rest of the crew, they all got, you know, some sort of, administrative handling of their cases, right?
Right, letters of reprimand, mainly. And, I mean, as you know, a letter of reprimand, anything like that, it's basically a career ender. You know, these people probably aren't going to, continue to get promoted. That said, that's something that you can handle out of court. I mean, you know, a senior officer can ask for someone's resignation, right? They can,
right.
They can put a letter in their file. They could do all these things without first bringing up charges, which puts it in a whole separate category.
Yeah, because then you back into it instead of saying, listen, you know, we've taken care of these things at an administrative level, but then they're free to kind of speak to the families. And, you know, because they don't have the specter of a criminal prosecution hanging over their head.
Yeah, and then if the issue from the Navy's perspective is, for example, we want these individuals to kind of answer publicly for what they've done, if that was kind of it. That objective was not 100% achieved either, because a lot of these individuals, kind of entered a plea or otherwise their cases were disposed of before they got to court, and they were never publicly identified. So, you know, we have a lot of cases where it's, you know, unidentified junior officer pleads to so-and-so, and that's all the public ever knew.
Right. And that's got to be difficult to hear.
Yeah.
What else are you covering? What do you see on the horizon, military justice-wise?
Oh, man. I mean, something I'm interested in is, I've always got kind of one foot in the Marine Corps, and there continues to be little pieces of news about this General Eric Smith over at 1st Marine Division and the way that he tried to root out hazing in the ranks. I don't know if you've been following that at all.
Yes.
But, I mean, I don't think that's a done deal yet, and I don't think they've fully adjudicated all the hazing cases either, or that issue has been completely put to bed. So was interesting to follow kind of what that general tried to do and how aggressively he pushed to kind of get these Marines really out of the uniform when he determined they were doing things that he didn't approve of.
Well, first, I've got a personal anecdote about General Smith.
Sure.
I served with General Smith, and I really like him. He's a great person. But when the officer slate, the selection of officers comes out, before it's published widely, it's published kind of privately to the general officers. So the general officers will know like a day before who gets selected for promotion. And General Smith was walking by my, I was a major working at McCitic, and General Smith walked past my door, and he says, Wyrick, hey, has anybody, and he kind of looking at me from at the side, he's like, has anybody talked to you about anything today? I said, no, General, what's it about? He's like, oh, okay, never mind, and walked away. And so I kind of was... It was about 20 minutes later that I was called into my general, General Mills, the 3-star, because I actually fell under his chain of command, and he told me that I'd been selected for lieutenant colonel. But it was a kind of odd interaction where to have I think it was at that time, the 1-star General Smith say, has anybody talked to you today? I'm thinking like, oh my God, what, you know, what horrible fate is about to befall me? Yeah, but yeah, out of Camp Pendleton, his statements about, I mean, he's been found to have committed unlawful command influence from those hazing cases where he's really crossed the line by saying what he expects to be the outcome of courts-martial before they've gone to trial, that these people will be, you know, pretty much found guilty and kicked out. Those were his marching orders.
And he's as good as his word. I mean, apparently about 30 Marines were sent to the brig and 18 were separated, you know, and this is within 1st Marine Division alone. So that's a very, very significant action, especially when you consider, you know, the Marines United Facebook harassment case. I don't think that many people have been separated as a result of that. And it's a much kind of wider ranging thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's been, that I've counted, maybe 3 cases coming out of Marines United. I can't.
That's probably accurate. I know there have been a number disposed of internally where they continued to serve, but.
Yeah, and there could be some other ones where, especially if they're very junior enlisted, where they weren't allowed to re-enlist. So we wouldn't actually be able to know about those. They could just give them a bad re-enlistment code. So those are actually separating those Marines, but technically not separating. You're just not letting them join again.
Right. Okay.
Well, Hope, thank you very much. And I know I warned you at the beginning, at the outset, but it seems that rooster decided not to crow during our interview. So we were very lucky to have good audio this entire time.
Well, great. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always so good to speak with you.
So military.com, where's the best place for the listeners to follow you? What's your preferred format?
Yes. Please follow me on Twitter and tell it like it is. My Twitter is at HopeSec. It's H-O-P-E, Sierra Echo Charlie Kilo.
I will also put that in the show notes. Thank you very much, Hope. Military Justice wouldn't be possible without the fine sound editing by Hannah McCarthy. And this episode is dedicated to the memory of my Uber producer, Dreadnought. You will always be missed out here.